From Esri, this is Engagement Matters, a show about people whose work depends on engaging with stakeholders to make meaningful change. No matter how you define your community, you can learn from the experts we talk to as they share their stories about motivating groups of people to care about issues and take action. On today's show, we'll talk with Dr. Laura Sharp from the City of Tucson, Arizona's Office of Equity, as she shares her data-driven approach to incorporating equity into how the city makes decisions. First of all, Laura, thank you for taking the time to share your insights with us. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
No problem. So before we get into the work that you and the rest of the team that you have at the Mayor's Office of Equity are doing, could you give us a little background on Tucson for those of us that aren't 100% familiar with the city?
Yeah, Tucson is Arizona's second largest city by population. We have around 540,000 people in the city proper and about double that in the whole metro area. It's a very diverse city. We're just 60 miles north of the U.S.-Mexico border. It was originally established by the Tohono O'odham people and only became part of the United States in like 1850. So there's also just a lot of Hispanic tradition. It's about 42% Hispanic, actually. And then we have smaller percentages of Black and African American people, Native American and Asian people. A lot of Caucasian white people. That Hispanic culture comes out in things like our Day of the Dead celebration. We're the city of gastronomy, so we have just a lot of Mexican food that's really good. It's a really fun, exciting city to be part of.
It sounds like it. And it sounds like it's the kind of place where there's a lot of diversity in terms of like different kind of subgroups of people that are unique to themselves. Which is why I imagine Mayor Romero started the Office of Equity, right? To kind of help the city better understand who you're serving and how to deliver services to folks to kind of meet them where they are.
Definitely. Yeah, we have a lot of different kinds of people, and she's really leading the charge in how we make sure that we're really reaching everyone and not just the people who have, you know, kind of always traditionally benefited from city services.
Yeah, that makes sense. But you guys aren't new to using data to try to help you uncover these kinds of insights about the city, right? I mean, you've been using GIS for a long time. You've been doing a lot of mapping. Can you kind of talk through that a little bit?
Yeah, the city actually has a pretty robust data and GIS component. We have the IT department is sort of the central resource that supports all of our GIS platform and our databases. And then every department has at least one GIS person, if not, you know, many more. And so we use data in, you know, a lot of our work and our decisions, basic things like managing assets, but also just to make decisions about where do we need to prioritize housing based on our homeless encampments and that population? Where do we need to plant more trees if we're missing tree canopy in certain areas? That's actually an equity issue if you look at the demographic trends with our tree canopy. You'll see that we're missing the most tree canopy in our areas that are predominantly people of color and low income. And even just things like, you know, where do we need to repair potholes?
Yeah, it's interesting how you're using data to kind of fill in the pieces of the puzzle that aren't readily apparent over time. It's not just about the service delivery side of it, maintaining a city and making sure that it's being built and growing and getting better over time, but that you're trying to expand that capability more and more by collecting more data and analyzing it in interesting ways. But you personally are not new to this. You've been in this industry for a while, right?
Yeah. So I started doing GIS back in undergrad in like early 2005. Then stayed in geography to get three different degrees, all in geography and GIS. And then right out of school, I started at the city of Tucson 6 years ago. I started in IT and working on that team that I told you is sort of the central GIS resource, the GIS IT team. And there I supported the rest of the city. So, you know, we maintain that platform, but also when other departments don't have the capabilities, maybe they, you know, don't have a GIS person, or they only have one who specializes in one type of work, then we could come in and say, hey, we can build that app for you. We can build that hub for you, help you design a data collection process. And through that, I really got to sort of touch everything that the city was working on and learned what really interested me. So I moved from there to housing, and I helped support a planning team, making maps and helping them, you know, just do more with the data that they had. And that kind of also introduced me more to equity, because housing, affordable housing, lack of it, is really an equity issue. And so when the Office of Equity came up in the city manager's office, it just made a lot of sense to me, because it's an office that it's like IT, where it touches every department, and I can use it to have a really positive effect.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It's kind of like with your skills that you built through your formal education and then all the time that you've been at the city, that you've got both the brains and the muscle to be able to, you know, combine that to do even more good in the city. That's really inspiring, I think. And I think the other interesting thing is that you all have really put a lot of effort into transparency. So it's not just using data internally for your own purposes to, like I said, uncover the puzzle and understand where to deliver services better and faster and more efficiently. But it's a lot of trying to post information out there so that citizens can understand what's going on and where and how it affects them.
Yeah, so the city is really doing a lot to push the envelope and how we engage with the community. It's just a real part of the organizational culture that we want to hear from the constituents that we serve. And we think of them as, you know, I report to the city manager, he reports to mayor and council, and they report to the citizens. So at the end of the day, they're really the people we're serving. So how can we hear from them and also reach them and make sure that they understand what we're doing and why? And so I kind of got into the engagement side of the city through technology. So I'm not, you know, just out there talking to people necessarily, but I am helping other people build technologies to talk to people. So I really work a lot in Hub, which the city uses a lot to like put out our, you know, new projects, put surveys up there to get feedback, post recordings of what we've done, event calendars, all of those things, reporting the data, you know, that we've collected through dashboards. So that's kind of where I see my place in all of that.
I think that's really similar to a lot of the customers that I talk to, that they're not trained communicators, they're trained technologists. And so they're leveraging the skills that they have to augment other people's capabilities and make their jobs easier. But I think it all points to how, you know, you guys at Tucson are taking kind of an all the above approach to engagement. It's not just, okay, we posted some stuff to our website, good luck, citizens. Like, we posted it, it's transparent, but not really, because you don't know it's there.
Or it's in the filing cabinet in the basement. Like,
right, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Like, how did you not know that was there?
Yeah.
You know, I think it's interesting because it takes more effort initially, but it seems like the dividends really pay off. I think that the way that you and the city of Tucson approach engagement is by using technology as something that enables you to do that work even better and faster. But when I speak to a lot of customers that are in a similar position, that are interested in engaging their citizens more, they're interested in taking equity into account in their city operations, they don't really know where to start, but you have built a strategy that helps you understand what the most appropriate uses of technology are and how to approach the challenge of including equity into your city operations in a way that's more thoughtful and consistent. Could you talk about the data strategy a little bit?
Yeah, the Tucson Equity Data Strategy is one of the big things that I started working on when I got to the Office of Equity. And what gave me the thought for it was, like I said, I have interacted with a lot of different departments. I understand kind of where the strengths are, where, you know, there's things that are missing. As soon as I started at the Office of Equity, and even before that, I would get a lot of questions about demographics and surveys and how to best ask questions like that. And so I just kind of understood, like, okay, if we want to help people start incorporating equity in the work that they're doing, we need to make sure that they have the resources to do that and that they understand how, because I'm just one person. I can't do all of the, you know, the equity analysis for every project we do, especially if we want to really, you know, bake that into the daily city operations. So I identified five areas where I thought that we could help as an office. The first is demographic collection standards and really just equitable data collection practices in general. So that's helping them understand, you know, what kinds of questions to ask, how to make sure that those are inclusive, and really just how do you analyze data in a way that is not going to do more harm. And so part of that includes providing survey 1-2-3 templates so that all of those questions and things are sort of pre-made, so that staff, or really this is all public facing, anyone in the community, that survey is ready to go. They just need to add their own questions in to make it just as easy as possible to, you know, we don't want equity to be hard. The second thing, and this is probably the sort of biggest component of TEDS, or it has the widest impact, is our equity priority index. And that is taking a lot of different demographic variables that make up what makes a person socially vulnerable. So these are things like being below the poverty line, having a disability, being a child, being elderly. And it kind of rolls all of those up into one map layer and assigns each area, like a block group or a neighborhood, a score on the sort of vulnerability scale of being vulnerable. And then the flip side of that is like being more resilient. So if, you know, life threw something at you, you lost your job, you lost your home, how likely are you to be able to bounce back after that? And so that helps us understand, you know, where do we need to be prioritizing our resources when we go out to do different projects, whether that's repaving or facilitating new broadband. It really is just designed to help guide our location strategy as a city. All of that is rolled up into the third thing, which is our equity data hub. And that is an open data hub where we have written, or we've worked with Esri to write a script for us that will process demographic data in all of the city's different geometries. So, you know, demographic data comes in block groups and census tracts, but we also do a lot with our neighborhoods and our planning boundaries, our police zones, all of these different areas where we also want the demographics associated with that. And doing that apportionment is not something that everyone can do to get those numbers. So this is all going to be pre-apportioned to our geometries, and it'll be automated. So every year we'll have those annual estimates. So that we're all using the same data. We're not all referring to different numbers for the same area. One of the other things is just a simple web map that lets people just click on an area of town or really anywhere in Arizona and return these really nice infographics about that area. And so this tool, we call it the Census Lookup app. It is designed for people who don't have any familiarity with data. So whereas the Open Data Hub is for someone who wants to download some data or, you know, do some analysis, this is just like, I need to know the demographics of people within a 1 mile radius of this park for this grant that I'm working on. And you can do this. It takes about, you know, 5 minutes. So that's kind of part of this, trying to make this all accessible to the most possible people. And then the last thing is just the TEDS toolkit, which is really all of these things that I've already mentioned, but then additional resources that help guide you through that. So tutorials on how to do different things, some Python scripts that will help you once you've collected your data, how do you analyze that quickly and easily to get information by demographics? Like, why did you collect that demographic information if you don't know how to analyze it? So just little things like that to try to make it easier for people.
Yeah, that's a lot to unpack. It's really good stuff. I mean, and so a couple reactions. You know, the first thing is I obviously, you know, working for Esri, I love that it's so GIS focused. It's so location aware and hyper local. So that makes total sense to me. And I like how you're using the technology and you're using the science of where to drive a lot of these things forward so that it's more intuitive for people. I guess if I really wanted to drill down on one thing, it's that you are building these tools so that the experts within departments in the city don't have to learn how to do all this stuff for themselves. It's like, okay, I need a hammer. I don't need to know how to build a hammer myself. I could just go and grab it and use it. Or I need a screwdriver. Go over to the toolbox, pull the screwdriver out, like done.
Right.
They still have to somewhat understand why they're using these tools. You know, like, okay, I've got a nail, I need a hammer. I've got a screw, I need a screwdriver. But it's not that everybody in the city has to become experts on GIS. They don't have to become experts on data. They don't have to be experts in equity. They can just rely on you and the Office of Equity to guide them in the right direction.
Right.
So, yeah. And I like also how, you know, you mentioned that, you know, that way, you know, when you're providing all this data, you can have one single source of truth, you know. So like I've visited some city websites in the past that, you know, if you're trying to look for like, what's the population of the city? Like you go to the Census Bureau and you get a number, and then you go to the city's website and you get a different number. And then you go to a different page on that same city's website and you get yet another number. And it's like, okay, yeah. Which one is the right one? So it's just, yeah, kind of goofy.
That's so, actually sort of the impetus of the index, where we had like five different equity indices, all using different variables, different, you know, vintages of data. And if you say, well, hey, we prioritize this based on the equity map, and it's like, oh, which one did you use? Because they're all different, and some of them are, none of them are up to date. So it's like, well, how can we just, you know, provide one that everyone can use?
Well, and I'd imagine if you're using more than one index or more than one equity index in particular, that becomes a real huge maintenance nightmare, right?
That it wasn't being maintained. So that takes care of that. You know, it's all out of date. And no, I mean, yeah, that was part of the problem, is none of them were maintained. So that's what this does. It's automated so that every year it'll be updated.
Yeah, it makes total sense. So let's focus in a little bit more on the equity priority index itself, because I think that in and of itself is really interesting. And a lot of people that I've mentioned this to before we talked, like, oh, wow, you know, you should really see what they're doing in Tucson with this index. And they're like, well, what's an index? Is it like a stock index? You know, is it going to tell me like what stocks to buy? And I was like, no, that's not clearly not what they're doing.
Right.
So can you kind of explain, you know, at a very basic level, like I think you already did, but just like what is an index, and how in particular does it help a department incorporate all these different facets of equity into their decision making?
Yeah, so I think about an index as, you know, a lot of times in GIS, we just put everything in a different layer and turn them on and off and say, well, you know, how do these overlay with one another? There's a high concentration of people of color here and a high concentration of people below poverty. And so an index, instead of having to turn off 12 different layers for every variable of interest, every demographic characteristic, it just takes all of those characteristics and rolls it into one number. So you end up with a table with each variable as a column, and each variable gets a score from 0 to 100. And then you roll those up do the math and you get a final score combining all of them. So it's more complicated in that, and that you have to think about the methods that you use to combine those different things. There's, you know, depending on the goals of the index, you'll use different techniques. Mm-hmm. But you end up with basically a map where the higher the score, the more vulnerable that population is. And that population would be considered more vulnerable if they have more people who haven't been educated, more people with a disability, more elderly people, more people without a car. And then the areas with a lower score, those are going to be the more resilient folks who, you know, they have more resources. And the way that the departments use this is, at least for our index is the vulnerability index, which is different from like an opportunity index, which I think, you know, both of those could in different ways be called an equity index. But we're focusing on just the people aspect of ours, just the demographics, so that departments can then bring in their subject matter specific data. So, for example, you know, I just met with the IT department. They're working on a project to encourage internet service providers to provide fiber and broadband services in unserved and underserved parts of the city. Those areas might not be traditionally lucrative for them to be developing in if people are low income. So we're developing a plan to encourage them to work there. So we want to look at places where you have a combination of these vulnerable populations, but also people who don't have internet. We have to look at where the infrastructure exists so that, you know, needs to be nearby. So we can kind of roll those up into a larger broadband equity index. And that, you know, data that the department brings, that can be anything from, you know, pavement quality or climate related things. And so the equity index kind of is just a foundation that people can build those more tailored indices on. And that kind of meeting departments halfway and really just making the index more useful, so that hopefully they don't feel the need to keep, you know, cranking out those different indices that are not being maintained if we kind of help them do it themselves.
That helps me understand it a lot better. And I think it helps explain to folks that aren't used to thinking in this kind of way. Is if you talk to engineers, like you kind of mentioned, you know, specifically traffic engineers have ways of giving a score, a single score to a segment of road and saying, okay, this has a PQI score of 90, you know, and that means something and it takes into account all these different things, all these different factors. But what you're really doing is you're adding on to that, not just what's the score in terms of, is the road alligatoring or is it, you know, splitting or does it need to be retopped or something? You're adding in how that asset in the city really impacts the people that live near it, which goes back to GIS and ties back into the science of knowing that real things in the world affect real people. It's not just all numbers and spreadsheets. So so right. I like the idea.
Yeah. So I just like the example of pavement or what you're talking about, because a lot of people, you know, I hear say, well, what does equity have to do with that? The road is either bad or it's not. It needs to be repaved regardless of, you know, who's living there. And we just need to fix the worst first. And the answer to that is, you kind of alluded to this, but that's going to have a different impact, you know, on people depending on sort of their situation in life. So if you hit a pothole and you're someone who's working in an hourly job and this means that you can't get to work that day, you might lose your job, your car's axle is messed up, you can't afford to repair it. Whereas someone in a more affluent area, they might have a job where, oh, it's fine, I can come in when I can. I'll just call an Uber, I'll just get the car towed, no big deal. Thinking about it like that, it's like, well, yeah, let's work on the areas where this is going to have a more significant impact on people.
And you're, again, you're not picking winners and losers. I mean, the same amount of work has to happen,
right,
over time. It's just a matter of prioritizing where, you know, it's triaging, really. You know, it's like what doctors do in war zones. You know, it's like, okay, everybody needs to be treated, but you know, these folks are really critical and we need to address that first. And then once we have the breathing room, we'll go back and help these other people as well. So,
right. And that's kind of hard to communicate to people. They feel like, oh, I'm being left out. Like, I'm not going to get what I need because of this.
Yeah.
So that is kind of one of our really big challenges, is getting that across to people that this doesn't mean that we're ignoring you. Mm-hmm. It just means we're making sure that we don't ignore those people.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's not a zero-sum game. Just because I'm not getting something this year doesn't mean I won't get my road repaved next year when it maybe is more appropriate to do it. You know, it doesn't have to happen right away.
Yeah.
I like that. I think it humanizes the work that cities do in a way that is not just, we keep saying equitable, but it really is. It's humanizing it in a way that's equitable, but it's also, when you take a step back and take yourself out of it, it just makes sense. So kind of taking a step back a little bit, looking at engagement as something that encompasses all these different components. You're looking at the science, you're looking at all these different equity markers. I think it's interesting how engagement is this continual process that you have to keep kind of chipping away at over time. But you have very clear goals that you're trying to hit. That's why you're engaging. So kind of taking a step back a little bit, we've talked a lot about the work that you do to put a lot of this stuff online, not just for departments to use, but for citizens and residents to be able to go and find and learn and take surveys and things like that. But that's not the ultimate objective, right, is to have everything in only one place. You disseminate this information around in a lot of different places.
Yeah. So, you know, it's easy for me to get caught up in the technical aspect because that's my wheelhouse. But it's really amazing what the different departments do to engage with citizens. And I really started to get an understanding of that when I was at housing. Up until then, I built the tools and then they went off and did the engagement and then I'd hear from them, well, how did it go? And then when I was in housing, I would actually go to the events and, you know, really see what is going on. And I really started to understand that it's difficult to talk to people. It's difficult to communicate complex ideas, especially about sensitive issues where people are worried they're not going to get the resources they need or they're not going to be heard. So we do a lot of, and the city as a whole, just going to where people are. So we hold our own events, at city locations and offer, you know, snacks and things like that. But we also go to parks, existing community events. Ward 1 did this whole door knocking campaign where they literally went around to every single door in Ward 1 to just say, hey, how are you doing? What's on your mind? And we have this, even this community ambassador model that different departments have used where you identify members of the community who aren't familiar with that community and they go out and represent the city and they help you communicate your message in a way that they know is going to make sense. And I really think we need more of those. And our office is hoping to be able to support that in the future.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I think as a resident of a city, obviously not in Tucson, unfortunately, but it is hard, not just hard for the city to communicate to people. It's hard for citizens, residents to know what's going on because you might not know where to go. But the way that you're doing this, where you have these community ambassadors that are providing that personal touch, you're going to these events, you're handing information out, it makes it so much more likely that those two worlds will intersect. I love that. I think that's really cool. And I guess for the folks that don't know where to start, like it's great to look at examples like you, Laura, and the city of Tucson and say, wow, you know, that's where we want to be. Okay, well, how do I get there? What's my roadmap? So what would you say to those people? Like, if I can't call up, you know, Dr. Laura Sharp Consulting Services, LLC, doesn't exist yet.
Yeah.
like, you know, where in the world do I start with this?
I do think that equitable public engagement is becoming more and more discussed. I know that our office is, we have a public engagement person who's developing an equitable public engagement plan. And so I think that, you know, in the future, there will be manuals on what that might look like. But I think when you're just starting, it's about building a culture where people value what the citizens are saying. And that's kind of what I was saying earlier about Tucson, is that we have that culture as an organization. And I can't entirely say where it comes from, but it's like each department has at least one or two people who are really pushing for that. And then the mayor is really supportive of that and uses that in all of her work. And so I think it's, you know, a combination of be the change you want to see, like you're doing the work, encourage everyone else to do that same kind of work, but also encouraging leadership to support that as well and make sure that they understand that. And I think Tucson, we benefit from the fact that our mayor and council are so supportive of the work that we're doing. And I sympathize with people who, you know, don't have that kind of support, because it can be difficult. And I think you just have to know that it's worth it and to keep pushing.
That was Dr. Laura Sharp from the City of Tucson, Arizona's Office of Equity, sharing her data-driven approach to equity and engagement. To learn more about the Office of Equity, visit equity.tucsonaz.gov. And if you happen to live in Tucson, share your thoughts with the city by filling out the survey that they have on that site. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a colleague, and don't forget to check out the other podcasts available from Esri, including Field Notes and Reinventing Planning. Learn more at esri.com.